I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. Let's return now to Brussels, a city officially in mourning for the victims of yesterday's terrorist attacks there. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the blasts at Brussels airport and in the subway system, and Belgian authorities have identified two of the suspected bombers. We don't know much about them yet, except that they were brothers born in Belgium. But we do know that hundreds of young Belgians have left their country in recent years to join groups like ISIS. And for every fighter who goes to Syria, there's a family back home affected by that choice. The World's Jeb Sharp was in Brussels last month and met with the mother of a young man who was recruited off the streets.
I met Geraldine Hennigan at the Women's Center in Molenbeek on a Saturday afternoon in February. She lost her son Anis to recruiters and then to Syria. He was killed there last year.
It's not easy for the parents because when we lost a child, for me, I have nobody. I have nothing. Only that my son we never come back.
She's now part of a support group for families like hers.
Because when your son or your other daughter left to Syria, you are alone in Belgium.
Alone and in shame. The group started in 2012, even before ISIS emerged. It's grown steadily to 48 people. And now family members are not just providing comfort to one another in their grief, they are also becoming advocates.
We can go to the authorities and to say, please help us. We are here. These children are Belgian children, and we must help them. And you must also help the parents.
Hennigan married a Moroccan man and converted to Islam 22 years ago. Her troubles started when her son Anis took a year off after high school. She said fine as long as he got a job. But he couldn't find one, which she attributes to the well-documented discrimination facing young men from North African backgrounds here. When he suddenly started waking up early for morning prayers, she thought it was a sign of discipline.
I was not thinking that it was the beginning of the recruitment. Then after, when I was left, I said, oh yes, it was the recruitment.
Next thing she knew, he was talking about the Palestinian cause, how it had festered for 60 years and no one was helping them. Next, he started talking about Syria.
But it was very more aggressive about the problem of Syria, because they say no authorities help the Syrian people. Nobody do something for them. It's not possible. I must help them. I'm a Muslim, and I can't stay on my chair when they are just dying by Bashar and so on.
Hennigan and her husband talked to him, reasoned with him, even suggested he go to Syria with an NGO if he was so impassioned about the cause. They became more and more concerned that his positions were hardening. When they found out he was planning to go to Syria, they went to the police and tried to have him put on a no-fly list. They were even assured he would be stopped if he tried to leave. The next thing they knew, the authorities were calling not to say they'd stopped him, but to say he was on his way to Turkey. She was beside herself.
It was not a joke. I ask it to you, but they don't do it.
But the officer she spoke to said they didn't have the power to stop him in the end because he was 18, an adult. Hennigan managed to stay in touch with her son, sporadically, by text, but she was never able to persuade him to come home. And a year after he left, she received the news she dreaded.
I received a short message from a young boy who was there. And he said to me, are you the mom? Yes, I'm the mom. And I must just say that your son is died. He was a good guy. He was loved by everybody. You must be proud of him. And I ask, who are you? And say, I'm a friend of your son. And he gave me your phone number. And he said to me, if I must die, please let it know to you.
Hennigan never gets all the way through this part of the story without breaking down. But even through her grief, she's very clear about her mission. She's always on the move these days, talking to kids about the dangers of radicalization, even going online to try to persuade kids who've left to come home. And she's pressing the authorities all the time to get their act together. One big issue is that there's no way for recruits to have a change of heart, because if they come back, they'll be thrown in jail.
So they are afraid to come back. They say, I will go in prison, I will have no future. So in place instead of to have no future, I prefer to stay here. And that is terrible.
Hennigan wants prosecutors to get creative about how to deal with people who want to come home and be rehabilitated. And she says the Belgian government needs to do much more to create opportunities for young people like her son who feel like foreigners in their own country. She says she visits schools where young people say, we see no future, we have no place, they don't want us.
And I say, no, you have the same teacher, you have the same study. You have your place, you are the future of the Belgium. And you must work here. You must make a big effort to have a place.
And with that, Geraldine Hennigan wraps up the interview and gets ready to rush off to another meeting. When I remark how busy she seems, she says it feels good, because as long as she's busy, she's not thinking about her son. For The World, Jeb Sharp, Brussels.